4:30 in the afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Gentlemen, the latest in the Mike Babcock coaching sweepstakes, coaching, I don't know, what else would you call it? Something like that. Initially, there was, you know, the announcement it was going to come down, his decision, by about May 25th. That was the self-imposed deadline by the Red Wings. In yesterday's interview with him and Ken Holland and Darren Dreger, he sort of pushed that date up now to May the 20th to talk about his future as a head coach. Maybe I'm reading too much into things. But if he sat down yesterday, as he did, with Ken Holland to talk to Darren Dreger, that tells me that the Detroit Red Wings are the leading candidate to retain the services of Mike Babcock.
Well, it tells me that they're the leading candidate. The only two teams to express interest are the Toronto Maple Leafs and Buffalo Sabres.
Besides
Toronto's
Detroit.
Toronto's a non-starter because it's a disaster there. And Buffalo's is an appealing job. How much more appealing is it, if at all, to the job in Detroit? You know, it's grass isn't always greener. So I think Detroit is... If it's not going to be Edmonton, and Edmonton apparently is going to hire McClellan, then I see it being Detroit.
Are you surprised? I mean, you're
surprised Philly hasn't asked to permission.
Yeah, we had.
And San Jose wasn't a realistic option. The weird, you know, reports of Chicago, that's a non-starter. So I think
Mark Bergevin, there was talk about Montreal. Mark Bergevin poured cold water on that, said they're not making any changes there.
I thought that was disrespectful to Michel Therrien. I really did. I'm not saying you mentioned it. I'm saying
these weren't my reports.
No. Yeah, I know. And obviously, you didn't say that. But I've always liked Therrien, and I realized that, you know, earlier in his career, Rich, because he was on the Montreal Canadiens before going to Pittsburgh. You know, he lost his temper quite a bit. I think he's done a good job with this team. And if you look at this team,
like, what do you expect from Montreal? Like,
I know
they played pretty well.
They
lost
played
to
pretty
the better
well,
team
and everyone's saying, well, if the Habs had Mike Babcock. And well, but he's not. He doesn't speak French and all that. And you know,
is Mike Babcock a 6'4" centerman?
Scotty Bowman didn't speak French when he coached
sure?
for Montreal. Well, in the beginning part,
I but he's from Montreal though.
I don't think he spoke. Well, he's Anglophone.
Yeah,
but I think he learned to speak French. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, like towards the end, towards the beginning. I mean, at the beginning, he's. Anyways, what my point being that shouldn't be an issue.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
But, you know, Mike Babcock wouldn't have won the Montreal Canadiens the Stanley Cup. That's my own personal belief. And I know Gary Lawless and Huss talked about this on their show. Like, is Mike Babcock the greatest coach? And the argument that Gary was making was, well, he hasn't done much in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And are you basing that on what he did in the Olympics? Absolutely I am. I mean, he coached Canada to two Olympic gold medals. That factors in, Rich, does it not?
What it does factor in.
Won a Stanley Cup.
What hasn't he done?
He's won a Stanley Cup, and he's been to three finals.
Yeah, with an Anaheim team that had no business even being near there.
And they almost beat the Red Wings almost beat the Lightning.
Right,
I know. One goal away.
I frankly thought that over a seven-game span, they outplayed them. Last year against Boston, they were as far on paper they didn't have a chance.
Does a great job with young players. I mean, you know, Glenn Denning and Shane and all these guys.
I think he's a great coach. I mean, what's lack of playoff success? I mean, what do you attribute it to?
Well, and really, can you say that he's got a lack of playoff success? I mean, the Red Wings themselves, you know, matched expectations probably.
The Red Wings were in the playoff race the entire year. It's not like the Detroit Red Wings like limped into the playoffs, like the Ottawa. Well, I shouldn't say the Ottawa Senators limped into the playoffs.
But I know what you're saying.
But they were there the whole year. Yeah, the Ottawa Senators had a late season push.
Yeah, the Red Wings struggled a bit down the stretch, but they still made the playoffs. I mean, you know, they made the playoffs. They took an Eastern Conference finalist, the team that might be the Eastern Conference champion.
He's a great coach. I think probably the lack of interest is due to the power that he has / wants. That's what I would attribute it to.
I know we're you know changing the outlook of the segment here a little bit.
That's
we're talking about where Babcock is going and all that. But to me, it's like the same thing. Is Wayne Gretzky the best player? To me, it's not an argument. That's the way I believe. I know Rich doesn't disagree with me. To me, Mike Babcock is the greatest coach. To me, it's a fact. And I'm not saying that there aren't good coaches. Joel Quenneville is a great coach. John Cooper is a great coach. Ken Hitchcock is a great coach. But I think, you know, if you asked the majority of GMs or coaches or players who's the best coach, inevitably the answer is going to be Mike Babcock. So it's not like I'm, you know, the only one that's that thinks that, right? His track, you got to give the guy credit. And Babcock is very honest and outspoken too. And he's been very good, I think, by the way, dealing with, you know, all this issue about where is he going and all that. He's really made it, he's really done a good job of not making that a distraction.
He did create it, but he also, I do agree, he didn't let his team become distracted by it. I agree with
right.
100%.
Yep.
And, you know, what, 3 years ago was that Chicago won the Cup against Boston, so I guess two and a bit years ago or whatever it was, Boston-Chicago final. His team was up 3-1 in that series. I know
they lost.
But they were in Game 7 against the Chicago team that was better on paper. And Game 7 this year against the Tampa Bay Lightning team that was better on paper. And had it not been for the comeback against his team in Game 4, who knows what would have happened. The adjustments he makes within series, within games, I think are very important. Of course, he has a staff, and the Detroit staff, and Ken Holland is the best general manager in the National Hockey League, so why wouldn't you want to work for him?
Well, and that's my question, you know, are you surprised? Like, why hasn't the Philadelphia Flyers, who don't have a head coach, reached out to him? Why haven't the...
We don't know that.
Well,
I mean, it hasn't been reported.
Well, they haven't asked for permission,
actually,
so yeah.
It was reported today. Damian Cox reported that the Flyers have not asked for permission to speak with him. So,
okay,
I
didn't know that.
Yeah, it just came out this afternoon.
I thought he reported that he's going to play in Switzerland.
No, that's Austin Matthews. We'll talk about that next segment. Yeah. But, I mean... You know, the Flyers seemingly haven't asked for permission. The Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, what's his name? Jim Rutherford came out and said, no, we're not gonna ask to speak with him.
Well, they have a coach right now.
I know they have a coach right now, but they can remove a coach for Mike. I mean, with all due respect to Mike Johnston as a head coach, if Mike Babcock's sitting there and is interested, and you don't know whether or not
the inmates are running the asylum. You don't know what's going on in Pittsburgh.
Right, of course.
Pittsburgh isn't really...
Okay, fine.
Pittsburgh wasn't at the... To me, Babcock...
Take Pittsburgh out of the equation, then,
and look at
Edmonton and Philadelphia, and, you know, I think Todd McClellan's a good head coach. I'm not sure why Edmonton wouldn't want to at least talk to Mike Babcock.
I agree with you, 100%.
I'm not sure who Philly's waiting to talk to because they don't have a head coach and they don't seem to be doing anything about it, as far as we know.
Yeah, Todd McClellan, though, I mean, on the topic, I'm, you know, not comparing them directly, but I think McClellan, for a young team, you need a veteran coach there. We talked about that last week, Drew, when you were gone. Todd McClellan, you know, from nearby Saskatchewan, good coach. And, you know, Richie mentions the situation in San Jose was untenable.
Yeah, Mike Babcock's from Saskatchewan, too.
No, but I'm just saying, I'm not comparing the two.
I know.
I'm just saying, for Todd McClellan, too, I could see that. To me, I'm just saying, my opinion is it's a good fit. Like, Dallas Eakins wasn't a good fit for this team.
I agree, but I don't know why Mike Babcock is any worse.
I'm not saying
work.
He wasn't a good fit. Let's be honest here. I think we underestimated Mike Babcock's... comfort level and wanting to stay in Detroit. I think everybody just thought right after the season ended he was going to leave, and I think we kind of said this all along, Richie. Mike Babcock might stay. I mean, you know, Don Cherry was talking about this on Twitter earlier this week. I mean, Mike Ilitch, great owner, great history with the Ilitch family there. You got to think Mike Babcock, it was probably just a matter of if the numbers worked out, Rich. If Ken Holland was going to give him the right number, he was always going to stay all along. He never said.
Really?
Did he ever say at any time he wanted to leave?
I think Babcock, but I can tell, as it seems like Babcock is disappointed, or not maybe disappointed, surprised at maybe the lack of overall interest.
Which would be fine, because I think you and me and Ezzy were all surprised at the lack of interest, too.
But let's talk about this for a second, right, Rich? Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk, right? They're getting a little older, but they've still got some decent years.
Yeah.
A couple more years in the NHL. But you look at the team, and there's a lot of promise there. You know, the Gustav Nyquist, the Thomas Tatars, and these guys.
Polkinen is a good young player.
Yeah,
Sheahan.
Dylan Larkin
playing for...
They're not that happy with Anthony Mantha right now, but they like Dylan Larkin, who they drafted in 2014 in the first round. But they're getting a new arena in Detroit, right? Brand new arena coming up in a couple years. I don't know why he would be disappointed. I think Rich, is what you're trying to say more so is he thought maybe there might be a little bit of a bidding war for him, right?
Yeah, I thought he wanted to set the market for coaches. He wanted to see what was out there, but he didn't. I thought it needed to be an environment and a roster that he could win with and also make a lot of money. And the problem with the Toronto one is he can make a lot of money with a terrible roster,
right?
With no guarantee of who the heck is in charge, even if it's him, with help of guys he's maybe not that familiar with. And then Buffalo, him and Tim Murray go back and have a relationship. And I think Buffalo's a pretty good gig based on their young talent. But again, the grass isn't always greener. You know what you got in Ken Holland. Is there any better general manager than Ken Holland?
Well, unless he was willing to take losing for a couple of years, because he's going to lose probably for 5 years in Toronto, and he's going to lose for a couple of years in Buffalo. the only other teams where, you know, you're probably not going to lose, Detroit, you're not going to lose because you know how good your team is. You just coach them. Edmonton, you bring in McDavid, you're probably, maybe you lose for another year. But
Edmonton might make the playoffs. Like, that's how good McDavid is. I mean, like, it happened a couple of years ago with Colorado.
Three defensemen and a goalie. But if
I don't think any of us would be surprised. Like, Connor McDavid has, what does he have, 75 points in the playoffs?
Something like that.
45.
He's out now, but you're right. Yeah. I mean, but Edmonton, you know, if you're going to lose, you might lose for a season.
Yeah.
Buffalo, it might be two seasons, maybe three. Pittsburgh, you're not going to lose because, you know, you have Crosby and Malkin and, you know, Letang and
Fleury. It was Edmonton
Fleury.
And Philadelphia. Were the
Philadelphia,
two.
You probably shouldn't lose.
You hear rumors, by the way, if we're going to go back to last time. I mean, you do hear rumors that Montreal is going to make an offer for Malkin, but keep going.
Yeah, okay. You know,
New
Philly,
Jersey hasn't been mentioned, but I don't think that's appealing to him.
New Jersey, I don't think, was an option. Philly, I don't think you're probably not going to lose long-term there with Giroux and, you know, Voracek, and they have a lot of young talent. So, really, I mean, the surprising part, or the lack of a bidding war, is because I think the teams he would really consider going to, Detroit, Edmonton, Philly, Pittsburgh, only one of those teams is really putting an offer in for him.
Rich makes a good point, though. I mean, you got to factor in, there's other factors as well, in addition to, you know, him wanting to set the record for how much an NHL coach, like, does he have, I don't know the answer to this, does he have a relationship with Ron Hextall and Ed Snyder? Does he have a relationship with Peter Chiarelli and Kevin Lowe? How good is that relationship?
He's worked with those guys in Hockey Canada before.
But again,
Edmonton guys, especially.
Not Ron Hextall.
No, the Edmonton guys, the Chiarelli and Lowe.
And that's why, you know, in addition, as you mentioned, he's from Saskatchewan. He has that experience with Peter Chiarelli and Kevin Lowe with Hockey Canada. That's why Edmonton, to me, was really the option. It was Edmonton or Detroit. I agree with Richie 100%. I don't think, and again, I don't know this for a fact, but I don't think Mike Babcock wanted to go. At this point in his career, does he want to go to a team like Toronto that, as you said,
I agree,
isn't going to be a winner for at least two, three, you said 5 years?
Yeah, if I would say, you know, Toronto won't be a winner for 5 years. Buffalo might not be a winner for 2 years, maybe three. Edmonton, maybe one or two, something like that. The other teams, though, that are probably going to be winners sooner rather than later, just don't seem to have interest in them. Philadelphia, boggles my mind.
But again, why would he go to Philly if he's in Detroit?
Agreed. I mean, I understand your point. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have the relationship with, you know,
the roster's not as good.
Yeah, it's not as good. I mean, I agree, but, you know, you would think that at least they'd be, you know, driving up his price or having a conversation with him or something. Like the fact that they're, at least by reports, and we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, the fact that there's nothing coming from Philadelphia as well, the fact that Pittsburgh isn't even, you know, there's ways to talk, if you have a head coach already.
I don't know, Drew. I think you have to look at Pittsburgh in this, at least I would, from what I've heard, look at it this way. As I said before, inmates running the asylum a bit there. I don't know what Rutherford and Johnson, I don't think has much power. Rutherford does, but who knows, you know, what's going on with ownership.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the two big guys who are overseas right now are making calls. I'm not so sure that's the best arrangement for
them. And again, too, like, you know, you mentioned Philadelphia. We know Edmonton, Todd McClellan, looks like he's going to coach there. Philadelphia, there's other coaches out there. Paul McLean, Peter DeBoer, Randy Carlisle. I mean, Dan Bylsma. Are these guys, maybe they want to hire one of these guys, right? There's other coaches out there.
But to Drew's point, why wouldn't you talk to him?
Yeah. It doesn't. I mean, all you're doing is asking for permission. It's not like you have to ask for permission, then give up the third round pick immediately.
Right.
Just talk to the guy. It doesn't cost you.
And
anything.
In the interview with Dreger, kind of Babcock said he learned a lot about other teams. At the end of the day, Detroit might be richer because they have Babcock as the coach, whatever they're paying him, and they have information about all the other teams. The old Al Davis.
Sure, so, sort of the reverse.
I'm not saying
Al
that's
Davis.
The reason why this happened, but.
But you're right. In any event, sounds like we'll find out in the next few days where Mike Babcock is going to end up. And if it's in Detroit,
it's not going to drag on, I don't think, past this next week.
He said the 20th of May he's going to have a decision by.
Yeah.
We'll bring it to you here on The Legal Curve. You're listening to TSN 1290. Quarter to five, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening here on TSN 1290. Still to come on the show, we're going to talk to Sunaya Sapurji of Yahoo Sports. The Memorial Cup, the four teams are set. We'll talk to her at the top of the next hour, do a Memorial Cup preview. And then Tracy Myers from CSN Chicago is going to join us to talk about the Western Conference Finals, which gets set tomorrow afternoon in Anaheim. This segment of the program is brought to you by our friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. Gentlemen, some news and notes from around the NHL. A little bit of a quiet time as we lead into the draft and, of course, then free agency. A lot of teams sort of doing things behind the scenes as opposed to making waves out front. But the Ottawa Senators did end up winning the Matt O'Connor sweepstakes, in case you're unaware. Matt O'Connor was a free agent college goaltender who had a lot of interest from around the league. The New York Rangers were interested. I believe the Edmonton Oilers were also interested. He ends up, the Vancouver Canucks also interested, ends up as an Ottawa Senators player. Sort of a two-part question. One, are you surprised to see the Senators as one of the teams involved in the bidding there, given that they have three other goaltenders that sort of come to mind, Craig Anderson, Robin Lehner, and Andrew Hammond, who had the great run in the course of the playoffs? And what do you think happens with the Senators' goaltending situation this offseason as a result of the Matt O'Connor signing?
I'm surprised he signed with Ottawa, Richie, mm-hmm. and I'm also surprised that the Rangers are interested, considering that they have arguably the second best or third best, or maybe some people think he's the best goalie. And Cam Talbot was excellent.
I think Talbot's on his way out, though, as he said, that's why.
Okay, so I mean,
not after this year, but after next
he
year.
He signed a contract that Talbot will be a free agent.
Again, you're signing him essentially to be a backup for the next 5 years, right? Because Henrik Lundqvist, I mean, he's set that's there true. As that's the number true. One goalie, right? Yeah. So to me, I'm a little surprised about the Rangers, but you know, you mentioned, Drew, the Ottawa Senators. One of those goalies, like something has to happen there, right? Something has to give. You're bringing in a guy that not necessarily going to be a starter in the NHL. Like he's probably, I imagine, going to start off in the AHL. But you've got Craig Anderson there, who you brought back, and Robin Lehner. And so, I mean, a little bit surprised. And again, I've seen him just in highlights, so I don't know enough about his game. But when you have that many teams after him, and you have good teams after him, like the New York Rangers, you know that he's got some talent, and he's probably going to be an NHL goalie probably a couple of years from now, you'd think, right?
Had some fantastic numbers for Boston University this year. 25-4-4, goals against average of 2.18 and a .927 save percentage. So seemingly there's a logjam in Ottawa. Richie, how do you think that gets played out? Andrew Hammond, worth noting.
Yeah, I didn't even mention Andrew Hammond. I mean, I'm almost considering Andrew Hammond like their third best goalie, but you got to think that there's four.
He's a free agent, so he can.
One of those goalies has got to come out of the equation, probably.
I would agree with that. Andrew Hammond, a free agent as they head into July 1st there in Ottawa.
Well, Drew, what's going to happen? That's what everybody's wondering, right? O'Connor's going to start the season in the AHL, so we know that.
Yeah.
So it's one of those other three guys. Where are they going to go? Anderson has 2 years left on his deal. He's got a reasonable cap hit of 4.2. He's got 3 years left on his deal.
Rich, sorry to cut you off. Why isn't Edmonton trying to get one of these guys?
Well, that's what I was going to say. So, I mean, Anderson probably, you know, Edmonton's going to explore their options there. I think maybe another goaltending needy team or two, and there aren't many of them. I think Anderson will be the guy on the way out, and then they'll go with Hammond and Leonard, see what's what, and then see what they have in O'Connor. That's what I would guess. And then Anderson, as he mentions, Edmonton makes a lot of sense.
Buffalo makes some sense there too, as well. They talked about Buffalo with Craig Anderson.
What Calgary did last year with Jonas Hiller, you brought him in, solidifies the goaltending position. That's what Edmonton needs. Like Ben Scrivens, you know, no offense to him, he's more suited for a backup role in the NHL.
I agree with that. And Talbot, I think, might get a shot somewhere too, but you probably want to split him with as a 1B, 1A kind of thing.
Auston Matthews, we mentioned him last segment. Yep. He's expected to be the top pick in next year's NHL draft, 2016.
I'm just surprised he's going to get less money in Switzerland than he would in the NCAA.
Zing. A lot of talk that he might go play in the Swiss League as opposed to playing in the Canadian Hockey League or NCAA next season.
I hope he likes chocolate and cheese.
Well, I mean, he certainly likes a paycheck, which he would get.
You do.
He would certainly get a nice paycheck, of course, playing overseas in Switzerland. And if I'm not mistaken, based on the CBA, if he plays over in Switzerland for a year, he would then be eligible to play in the AHL under the age of 21, which would be different than a player who plays a year in the NCAA or plays a year in college in major junior hockey or the Canadian Hockey League, rather. So, you know, what do you think about Auston Matthews going to play for the Swiss League? You know, sort of kick-starting the professional aspect of his career a little bit earlier.
Well, Drew, as AC/DC says, money talks.
Are you surprised more players don't consider this route?
No, I'm not, because you're 17 years old, and you're going over Europe. I mean, that's very common for Europe to North America. It's not common the other way around. So that's why I'm surprised.
Yeah,
I know Mark Crawford's coaching the team he's going to go to, and he's an NHL coach, and you know, experience, and be able to kind of show him the way. But there also is the element of, don't you want to be a kid for a bit longer?
Yeah, that'd be a good guest to have on the air, Mark Crawford, talking about, you know, how what it's like to coach a guy like that, you know, who's going to be a top pick. Maybe we can get him on. Austin Matthews, you know, tons of talent playing with the U.S. national development team. It's just something you don't see very often. You know, Richie mentions, you got to remember, at 17 years old, I mean, do most parents, either in the U.S. or Canada, or you could even talk about Europe, but I mean, we're more familiar with obviously the U.S. and Canada. It's a big step as a 16-year-old, you know, sending your kid to the WHL, right? You're not with all of your high school friends and all that, and you live with the Billet family and everything. So Austin Matthews, it to me, I don't have a problem with it, and I don't think he would care what my opinion was. But I think that, you know, Austin Matthews, you know, his rights were held by the Everett Silvertips, I believe, a team that hasn't really had, when you think of, you know, the great WHL teams, especially, you know, this year, Kelowna, Brandon, I mean, Everett doesn't really factor in there. I'm not saying that it's not a good organization, just saying it's maybe that factored in, Rich. Maybe he wanted to play for another team in the WHL. Maybe that factored into his decision to go to Switzerland. But as you mentioned, Mark Crawford has had the NHL experience. You know that you have a good coach there. It's the debate that him and his family obviously thought, this is a better way for me to develop my game. I mean, he also could have stayed with the U.S. National Development Program. That was an option for him as well. And we've seen guys like Jacob Trouba. I mean, we talked about Dylan Larkin again and again. That's a good route before the NHL. So there's a reason why he thinks this is going to be better for his development, right?
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the money aspect, but these guys also insure their careers, don't they? Like the football players do, for sure. So I don't get me wrong. He's more than entitled to do it, and that's his choice. I'm somewhat surprised by it, and maybe it does start. I don't think it's gonna start and end up being a trendsetter. I think you'll see it occasionally, but I think rarely. And I know he'll get his however much money he gets, and probably tax limited, and you get benefits, you know, of probably house and car, and you're not paying for. But he'll make his money anyways, based on the reports, right? So
you know, Drew, just to get this in quickly, Julius Honka did this. He's a Dallas Stars prospect.
Yeah.
He was able to play in the NHL because he played in Finland.
That's right. He played.
He was a
2014 first round pick of Dallas, right?
He was. And he's a highly regarded prospect for the Dallas Stars. And he's supposed to be, a big part of that. They need a guy like him. I'm not saying he's going to play in the NHL next year, but within the next couple of years, they'll give him a chance. But, you know, so the precedent is there. I mean, players have done this, but it's just not your typical route to the NHL. That's why I think it's getting so many headlines, and because of the nature. I mean, everyone's pegging Austin Matthews as the first overall pick, right?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, that it basically the debate becomes, well, what happens if he struggles? He's going to be playing against men. I mean, is that league, when you talk about the Swiss league, it's a good league. A lot of Canadians go there, Rich.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's not as good as the KHL or the Swedish Elite League.
Well, but you see a lot of, I mean, you talk about playing against men and, you know, maybe not putting up the numbers. You see a lot of first-round picks who play, you know, as 17-year-olds, they play in the Swedish Elite League and they don't put up numbers against men.
Also
and
true.
They still get drafted, you know, high in the first round.
Oh, but yeah, I don't think that'll really
I don't
matter.
Think it'll affect. I think he's still going to be the you know, top one, maybe top two pick when it comes to the NHL draft next year.
Steen playing Sweden before Toronto too? Moto?
I'm not sure.
Could be. Would make sense.
I mean, players have done it.
Yeah. The Coyotes thing, TSN's Rick Resthead, big
I
report.
We have a moratorium.
I know, we have a moratorium. As he mentioned it, we sent out an email. I wanted to include it just for Ezzy's sake.
I think it's worth mentioning. I mean, they're losing a lot of money in Phoenix.
Great reporting by Rick Westhead, as we've come to expect, of course, but no surprise. I mean,
no.
It's a disaster. We know that. Las Vegas will be a disaster, you know, when that happens, 3 years or 4 years after the fact, and we'll put a moratorium on the Las Vegas Wranglers and not discussing them on the show. One last signing, Jordan Tutu, 1 year, $825,000.
Good for Jordan Tutu. I mean, he's had a lot of personal issues, and at this point in his career, you know, he's lost a step. I remember watching Jordan Tutu when he played in the MJHL like years ago. He was on OCN, right? No, but it's good for him, Jordan Tutu. I mean, he signs on a team, New Jersey Devils. They're going to struggle next year, Rich. And it's a good story for him because he was on Detroit and, you know, he kind of fell out of favor on Detroit because, again, he's not as quick as he used to be, but he's still a guy. It's nice for him to get what might be his last NHL contract.
Yeah, now they're around that brings physical element to the game and that's always welcome. You saw, you know, the role of some physical guys who, even Tanner Glass today, early part of the Rangers Lightning game, was really engaged physically and has an effect on the game.
So. Yeah, 10 goals for him also last year, so he was able to put the puck in the net probably better than
fourth line right winger.
There's oddly, maybe it's because I'm a Devils fan. Just kidding, but there's a lot of Manitoba connections there. Bryce Salvador, Travis Zajac, Severson, Tutu. I'm just saying, there's a lot of Manitoba connections on New Jersey.
Let's go to the Jay and Dan podcast from earlier this week, the courtesy Fox Sports.
Hey, can we get back to Winnipeg for a sec?
Sure.
We had something that happened on the podcast. I appeared on the Illegal Curve afternoon radio show on TSN Radio.
I've heard of it, yes. In fact,
really nice
guys. I went out with one of those guys when I was in Winnipeg.
Really nice guys. Yeah. And this happened during the radio interview.
Just on a few albums.
So here's the thing. I was watching a Springsteen. We have a station in the States that always shows concerts, and I stumbled upon an old Springsteen concert. Is that someone's pubic hair on the desk here? Is that a pubic?
That might be one of my beard hairs, Dan.
But I don't have great hair, so follicles. So that could very easily just be one of my hair follicles.
Anyway, guys. So we had pube on the desk.
Now, having met both those guys, they do... The one guy has like a really thick beard.
Did not match his beard hair.
A super hipster beard. Didn't match either of their beard?
No.
Beards?
Why are pubes following me around? That's the only question I had.
I don't know. I can't answer that.
We had the opportunity to hang out with Jay and with Dan on separate occasions, and that's what I was saying earlier in the program about Ezzy. You had the big beard back then.
Yeah. I had a beard that was, what, four or five-month beard.
It's pretty hipster.
Huge. It was pretty hipster.
It's hilarious. You know, again, we were talking about it in the first hour of the show. Now, those guys are just so fun to be around. Yeah. Like, if we can, hopefully we can get them on again. But, you know, the Jay and Dan podcast is great. And it was so funny. Like, Dan, we didn't expect him to say that.
That wasn't scripted.
No, I'm just saying, not that, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was so funny because it was so random. And then I think Rich later on in the interview put a cover on it. And Dan was joking that, you know, we should pitch that to Shark Tank. And it was hilarious.
Well, you guys should have done CSI Illegal Curve just sounds like a fantastic show. You guys can go around
those
doing
guys
that.
They're living the dream. Like, those guys are the best.
Yeah. They are terrific guys, and we thank them, of course, and had a great time at the Hockey Manitoba 100th year celebration. Or you guys did. I wasn't there, but you guys had a great time.
We missed
time.
You there. I wish you could have been there. That was a fun interview. Obviously, Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com was there, and it was tons of fun.
Well, it was a great show. I listened to it after the fact. That was terrific. Head to break. Sunaya Saperji, Yahoo Sports Junior Hockey Editors, next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. She covers junior hockey for Yahoo Sports, Sunaya Saperji. Sunaya, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Sunaya? Thanks for joining us on the long weekend.
Not bad.
That's
doing
good.
Well, enjoying the weather.
Excellent. I hope you are there. I hope you are. The weather's better in Toronto than it's going to be in Winnipeg, so that's good news to start. Sunaya obviously brought you on. We now know the four teams that are going to participate in the Memorial Cup starting next week in Quebec. You know, looking at the four teams, we'll break it down, you know, team by team. You know, how would you rate the sort of the talent level of this Memorial Cup as compared to more recent years?
I think it's going to be an excellent Memorial Cup. You know, you've got some high-powered teams, and even without Connor McDavid, you still have some big names and some big stars. People that you know, players that people would be familiar with. So I think it's going to be good. I'm excited to see how it all plays out.
So now you mentioned that Connor McDavid's not going to be in the Memorial Cup, and it's unfortunate. But you know, you've had a chance to watch him play in the OHL this year, and especially in the playoffs. When I think he finished, what was it, with 45 points in the playoffs there.
Yeah, 49 actually. Yeah,
40. Yeah, so he probably got 4 points as I was saying that. no, but you know, Connor McDavid. I mean, what can I really ask you? Everyone knows he's going to go first overall when the Edmonton Oilers go up there and draft him in June. But I guess, How amazing has it been to cover him and watch him these last couple of years? And do you think really he is going to live up to the hype of being that generational player?
You know what? I think when he came into the league as a 15-year-old, I think when you saw him, you knew he was special. But I didn't really realize how special he was going to be until really this year, because he elevated his game so much that it was really a cool thing to watch this guy develop. And obviously, as he developed, so did the Erie Otters. Their team, got better and better. And you know, this year they made it to the OHL final, and they just lost last night against Oshawa. So I think one of the things, that really impressed me was the way he could just dominate a game. And I think it was interesting to watch the series against Oshawa, because they did such a good job in shutting him down and shutting down that line. But you know, when you think about the fact that he's only 18 years old, and, you know, they had guys who had already been drafted, 19-year-olds, you know, guys like Cole Castles. They had a veteran defense pairing out against him, Josh Brown, who is an overager, and Dakota Mermis, who was with the London Knights last year. It took all those guys to really contain him. And I thought that was really impressive. Impressive on the part of the Generals, but also impressive that's what needed to happen for Connor McDavid to be shut down, essentially.
You know, Sonny, when you lead into the Memorial Cup, it's always, from our perspective, because you're following the league on a day-to-day basis, but every year the Memorial Cup comes up and you're not sure, you know, which league. Sometimes you know which league is the strongest, but not always. The team that comes from that league isn't always the best as compared to the competition. You know, who do you think, which league, first off, do you think was the strongest this year, and which team do you think would be the favorite?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer, only because the only, I guess, real kind of gauge you get during the season is those Super Series games that the leagues play against Russia. But, you know, I think the Western Hockey League had another really strong year. You know, you had the two top teams in the Western Hockey League facing off in that final in Kelowna and Brandon, which was a bit of a surprise to see Kelowna sweep Brandon. You know, the Oshawa Generals are a very strong team. In the OHL, they weren't the top team, but they certainly showed in the final that they deserved to be champions. And, you know, in the Quebec League, you've got Rimouski, who is the top team in the Quebec League, going against the Remparts, who kind of had an off-and-on, a kind of hot-and-cold season. But after they got past the first round, they really seemed to get their act together. So, you know, I think that's a really hard question to answer, because I think the only time you really see how good the leagues are is when they're playing against each other, which you don't actually see until they make it to the Memorial Cup.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Sunaya Sapurji. She's the junior hockey editor for Yahoo Sports. We're talking about the Memorial Cup, which kicks off next week. And Sunaya, we know the four teams that are going to be in it. Obviously, Quebec and Rimouski still playing for the President's Trophy in the QMJHL, but Quebec, by virtue of being the host, have known that they're going to be in the Memorial Cup from the start of the season. They sort of had a middling, sort of a, you know, not a great regular season, sort of average. Have you got the impression that they've really been able to sort of turn it on now that they know they're going, you know, the games really matter more, that they've entered into the playoffs, because they've had a fantastic run in the QMJHL playoffs?
Yeah, they have. And like I mentioned, their regular season wasn't that great. It was kind of hot and cold. You know, they added some new players, and I don't know if it just took a while for them to finally gel. You know, they got Anthony Duclair back from the New York Rangers. They traded for Zach Fucali, who people will remember from the World Juniors. But they really had a tough time in the first round of the playoffs. They needed seven games to beat Cape Breton in the first round. But since then, they've pretty much been lights out. So, and I mean, I think if you spoke to a lot of people about how you saw this President's Cup final in the queue playing out, you know, I think a lot of people would have said, oh, Rimouski is going to wipe the floor with them. Like, I don't think a lot of people expected it to be as close as it's been, and especially with Quebec leading the series 3-2, because Rimouski was the top team in the queue, as I mentioned, this year. So I think the Remparts have really peaked at the right time after that first round scare.
So Naya, you know, we talked about the Oshawa Generals earlier. They defeated the Erie Otters to represent the OHL in the Memorial Cup. A lot of people will know Michael Dalcol, who was drafted 5th overall by the New York Islanders, a team that's got a lot of good young players there. How did you see his game this year in the OHL? I know his numbers were still good, but is he a guy that you think's ready to move up to the NHL next year?
You know, I think that's going to depend on Michael Dalcol and the kind of summer he has, but he's definitely shown that it is possible. I know that he used the World Junior snub, you know, last cuts for the Canadian World Junior team, and so he really used that as motivation. And you know, he had a really good playoff run. He was one of the top contributors for the Oshawa Generals in the playoffs. I think he had 31 points in 21 games, and so his game has gotten better as well. So I think offensively, he's definitely going to be one of the guys that the General rely on, you know, when they head to Quebec City next week.
So now, there's a question away from the Memorial Cup for 1 second. We'll get back to it. The Austin Matthews news, and I know it's likely probably to go to play in the NCAA, but does the fact that a player is going the other way overseas to probably make significant amounts of money, is that on the CHL's radar? And if it is, how significant?
You know what, I think it would have to be. You know, I think usually it's the other way around. You know, players are coming from Europe to play in the CHL or in the NCAA. You rarely see players from North America heading to Europe to make money, at least as, you know, an 18 or a 17 or an 18-year-old. So I think that's definitely got to be on the CHL's radar. If Austin Matthews does in fact go and play in Switzerland, then yeah, because especially if he does well, that could be an opportunity that others might look at, and you know, it might just be another avenue for players to investigate in terms of being able to play against men in a good league and also make some pretty decent cash at the same time.
Our guest on The Legal Curve is Sunaya Sapurji, talking about the Memorial Cup, which gets underway in Quebec next week. Sunaya, obviously shifting our focus to the Western Hockey League. Those of us in Manitoba were rooting for the Brandon Wheat Kings. They went up against the Kelowna Rockets, who took the series by a sweep four games to none. How surprised were you with that outcome, the way Kelowna was able to handle Brandon in relatively easy fashion?
You know what? Honestly, I had picked Kelowna to win this series. I didn't expect sleep at all, you know, especially with the kind of season that Brandon had and the trades that they had made. I thought that was actually going to be like a 6 or 7 game series. I was quite surprised that Kelowna was able to sweep the way they did. But I mean, Kelowna's got a great team. You know, they made some trades of their own, getting Draisaitl, you know, in that trade, and then getting Josh Morrissey to help their blue line. So, you know, like I said, I had picked Kelowna, but I really didn't expect them to sweep Brandon.
You know, on that topic, you know, you mentioned there's a lot of star power on that team. Leon Draisaitl, of course, who did start and almost played the entire year with the Edmonton Oilers. It was a good decision,
yeah.
I think. But, you know, you mentioned Josh
Morrissey.
Josh Morrissey, of course, Inaya, who Jets fans were obviously following and will be following the Memorial Cup. Madison Bowie, who's from Manitoba. Jackson Whistle's a guy that shut out the Brandon Wheat Kings, the goalie for the Kelowna Rockets. And, you know, is he just, you know, raising his draft stock coming up for June?
Oh, most definitely. You know, I thought he played great. I was able to catch a couple of their games, and I thought he was outstanding. And I thought, you know, heading into that series, that was one area where I was a little concerned about Kelowna, but he's been fantastic. He's definitely allayed any fears I had about, you know, them being goaltending being like the weak link there. But having said that, their defense is awesome. When you look at you know, Josh Morrissey, Madison Bowie, Mitchell Wheaton, you know, so that's not really a surprise in that sense when you look at how well they play as a team defensively. But yeah, I think that's definitely going to help his draft stock. And same with Ken Appleby, who is the Oshawa Generals goaltender. He was also undrafted, and he was lights out in the OHL final. So there's another guy who probably has helped his at least his draft stock, or you know, at least getting a phone call in the summer for an NHL tryout.
Sunaya, we'll let you go on this last question with Connor McDavid, obviously, and his Erie Otters being eliminated last night in the OHL finals. Who's the best draft-eligible player that's going to be in the Memorial Cup that starts next week?
Oh, geez.
sorry for putting you on the spot there.
He took that question off Twitter.
I did not.
Hey, Sunaya, Sunaya, you picked the Kelowna Rockets, so you know you're picking this good this year.
And now you're putting me on the...
You can pass if you want.
I'm just trying to think. You know, it's so weird when you are covering the playoffs, you get like this playoff tunnel vision. Sure. So like, you know, the playoffs are ending and now I'm like going into Memorial Cup mode, and draft mode is still, you know, like another month away. But I'm just trying to think because Dylan Strom is out.
Yeah.
And Mitch Marner is out. I'll have to go through the draft list to see who's next there.
Way to go, Drew.
I'll tell you what, Sunaya, don't worry about it for now, and we'll catch up with you again coming up in the next couple months, and we'll come back. We'll revisit that question at that point in time.
Okay, sounds good, guys.
Okay, Sunaya, thanks very much for joining us. Have yourself a great long weekend, and we'll look forward to your coverage of the Memorial Cup coming up next week.
It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Sunaya. Take care. Let's go to break.
Drew, let me ask you a question.
I have no idea is the answer, Richard.
You know, she mentioned that sometimes you get tunnel vision. Drew has bagel vision.
Yeah, he just looks at you.
That's exactly,
bagel,
that's exactly what, yeah, you know, really drives
Richard,
Drew throughout the show.
Richard's had about 8 cookies in the course of the show.
Yet cookies.
Your wife made a good
your
cookie.
Your wife makes
Drew.
A good cookie.
I know she makes a good cookie, but you had to throw me under the bagel bus. You couldn't throw Richard under the cookie cab. As
you can't
a,
have cookie vision because you have to look through the bagel. Look to the cookie.
I just picture Drew driving a bus that's made out of bagels, and the steering wheel is just a big bagel.
You say look to the cookie, Richard.
Now the listeners are like, I hope those 3 mics go down again.
You say look to the cookie. One of the things that we wanted to do most, or Laura wanted to do most in New York, is find a good black and white cookie. So I can report that, yep, we were successful in our attempts.
Did you find any babka?
She wanted to go to a specific babka place. I think it was closed by the time we were trying to get
there. Did you
guys
go to Monk's?
We didn't go to Monk's, but we did
go to Monk's.
We did go to Katz's, though.
Yeah. Yes. I haven't been to Katz's. I've been to Carnegie. They make a nice big sandwich.
Carnegie was closed when we went there.
They ran out of meat.
No, it's like...
Drew, you were in town, and they shut the doors.
Said they've been in business for 80 years. There's one thing they couldn't survive, and that was the presence of the Mindell. So they decided to just shut the doors and go on with their day. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Sunaya Sapurji joining us to talk about the Memorial Cup. Always an interesting tournament.
You know what, Drew? Really quickly, follow Sunaya. Great writer. We've had her on a bunch of times. Sunaya S is her Twitter handle.
Yes.
And she does a great job covering junior hockey. And again, you know, good friend of ours, and she's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Preakness Stakes about to get underway in a matter of minutes.
Raining out there, Drew.
It's not. I mean, those are terrible conditions. I don't know how that.
Who's the favorite?
American Pharoah, who won the Kentucky Derby, of course, is the favorite.
Does American Pharoah love the slop?
I don't know if he loves the slop, and I don't know if his mutter was a mutter, if his father was a mutter.
It is sloppy there.
A lot of Seinfeld references today. I like
but
it.
Yeah. But it's Richie brings up the Seinfeld reference, but it does look kind of sloppy. Like they're dealing with some.
Well, it's you know, they're having huge rainstorms.
I got to bring this up because Rocky's probably listening. Our good friend Neil Rockman. You know, we were in Kentucky. We mentioned that for your wedding. And I can't help but remember when we placed a bet as a group on a horse and a bird You know what?
Did his business.
Did his business on Neil, and we won.
Yeah, it's good luck. Good luck. That was at my wedding. It's good luck. We placed the bet. Neil got pooped on by a bird, and then we won the bet. Sunaya just tweeted at us, guys. Nick Merkley is her answer to the best draft eligible player that's going to play in the Memorial Cup.
He had a hat trick, if I'm not mistaken, against Brandon.
Yeah, Kelowna Rockets, Nick Merkley. So you can keep your eye out for him. Expected to be a top draft pick.
I think he's a mid to late first rounder, okay, if I'm not mistaken, where he was drafted by Central.
Well, you're going to be at the draft, so you better know by June 26th.
Yeah. You and Dave and going to head down there to
tickets,
Miami.
Actually, we got a nice little flight down to Fort Lauderdale. It's going to be good.
There you go. So we'll look forward to that coverage here on TSN 1290. Let's talk about the Western Conference Finals. Get started tomorrow afternoon because, well, we don't know why. Get started tomorrow afternoon between the Blackhawks and the Anaheim Ducks. I'm looking forward to this series. This is the Blackhawks and the Los Angeles Kings. I think it's going to be as good as that series was last year in the Western Conference
Finals. Well, I don't know about that, Drew. That was like the best series of the past 10 years.
It could be close.
I don't subscribe to the theory that this is the Stanley Cup Finals and the Eastern Conference is the second, but I don't think that's the case at all. I think all the teams are very close. So I'm going to let you know there. Yeah. I know I've heard that tossed around.
Especially with the Rangers. They win every game by one goal.
Yeah, and the Rangers are real good. This series, I want to recap our predictions from last round at the end of the segment. So
Richie's 10-2, by the way. Like overall, Rich is 10-2. I'm 8-4.
But I got the Wild over. I had Wild over Chicago, and that was a big one. And I had the other one. I had was I guess we'll talk about it now.
It's like Ottawa.
Ottawa over Montreal.
Right. That was in the first round.
Yeah, and you weren't on there for your prediction. So as he's doing well.
If Washington beat the Rangers, mm-hmm. we would have both been 9-3.
This is true. So your dad's a mathematician. I can see why.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, Rich.
Unless there's well. Okay.
It's not an apple tree.
Yeah, that's not an apple tree. This series is a contrast in styles, I think, but at the same time, the intention of both teams is to score as opposed to prevent goals. And I think that's very important. I mean, both of these teams want to create offense. So I look at it as, okay, you look at the forward groups here. I think Chicago 1 through 12 has a slightly better forward group, but not by much. I think Chicago on the defense has a better defensive group, and I know their bottom pairing won't be as strong as the Ducks' bottom pairing. I guess if you consider Stoner and Vatanen to be their bottom pairing, Stoner's actually played solidly, I think, and I do like Vatanen. Moves the puck, and I think he'll be real effective in this series. And then in goal, I mean, you could probably call it a toss-up, in my opinion. So if you look at it, I think the Hawks are slightly the better team. Both of these teams in their own zone, I know Anaheim succeeded so far in the playoffs and been very good, but both of these teams in their own zone somewhat concern me, and I like that. You know, I mean, you watch Anaheim in their own zone, they've been very good in the playoffs, but I think against a far more talented team than they've played, because Winnipeg and the Flames aren't exactly that talented up front. Mm-hmm. They're going to have some coverage problems.
Chicago's playing with four defensemen practically.
Yeah, they are. I mean, and you know, the size issue down low. I mean, just Anaheim on any team against any team causes problems. I know that Chalmerson's big and strong, can move, and Seabrook's not as good of a skater, I don't think, as Chalmerson, but he's big and strong. He's a real smart player, real good player. Odia's gonna have trouble in his own zone for sure. Keith's not as big, but Keith is a very smart and a very good skater. And then the bottom pairing is going to be a real issue. So, I mean, home ice advantage in this series will be a factor. I think more of a factor because of the bottom pairing. I think it would have been a factor anyways with Roosevelt. Like, I don't think Roosevelt is anything to write home about. So his lack of foot speed is an issue, and they didn't necessarily trust him much. So Rundblad will be a big issue if he plays. Whoever they throw in is going to be a problem. The cycle game of Anaheim is going to be trouble, and I think Anaheim is going to have problems with Chicago in transition, which was why I think every game is going to be an 8-goal game probably. I really do think it'll be high scoring.
I thought the NHL disallows goals at this point
in
time.
They only allow
3 goals a game in the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's been really boring playoffs so far. I think the playoffs have been a very average. I think the playoffs have been below average so far overall, but I think these series are going to change that. And I think sometimes it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
First round's the best, and then it kind of goes down. I think these series are going to be excellent, and I have the Hawks winning in 7, but I think they're very close, these two teams.
Yeah, and Rich, I think the second round picked up when, especially when Montreal won a couple games, because it looked like Montreal was going to get swept there,
yeah.
Right? And then the Rangers-Washington series, I told you guys, I know there weren't a lot of goals, but I thought that series was fantastic with lots of physicality and all that, and great goaltending. Braden Holtby, I think, was had one of the more underrated years for a goaltender in a year where Carey Price really stole the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think this series is going to be fantastic, Richie. And you don't want to – I mean, I know everybody likes to compare it and say, well, is this going to live up to the Chicago-LA
sure.
series of last year? I think it might. It's going to be tough, but it's going to be excellent. I don't think there's a way that this series isn't going to be excellent. You know, a lot of the points, Richie, that you make are I agree 100% with. You know, this Chicago Blackhawks team, to me – has been the most dominant team, and that's
you're right,
and that's
you're
saying right. a lot because the Anaheim Ducks swept the Jets and defeated Calgary pretty easily, right?
Yeah, the Ducks have played 9 games. The Blackhawks have played 10.
Yeah, and Minnesota, we thought Rich picked Minnesota, and we thought Minnesota would give Chicago more of a problem, but they just weren't getting enough offense, Rich. And, Dubnyk wasn't playing otherworldly like he was in the regular season. Mm-hmm. So, for me, there aren't many issues. To me, this Chicago Blackhawks team, and I think you got to give Stan Bowman and the Chicago Blackhawks a lot of credit. Sure, they might lose a couple players this year, but you look at their team, it's almost a perfectly constructed team. Like, you've got your Norris defenseman, and you've got really good...
Sam Bowman didn't even put any of this team together.
No,
this guy's going to win three cups, possibly, without doing any of the dirty work.
That's what I'm saying, for keeping it together.
It's not easy to re-sign Taves and Kane to max deals, That takes a lot of work.
Okay, let's forget I said that. Let's get back to the regular analysis, because I know I'm going to get Richie excited here. But,
Dale Talon get half of every ring that he gets?
The Chicago Blackhawks team, after you get past the unbelievable... first line there with Jonathan Taves and Marian Hossa. And by the way, doesn't it feel like these two teams haven't played in a month? It's been like a week. But at this time of year, it feels like we haven't seen them for a long time.
The Honda Center's been closed for service.
There was a concert last
night. The Hondas last a long time. Shouldn't they be open for business?
The great resale value. I drive a Honda. No, but this series is really going to be great. By the way, these teams have never played in the conference finals before, so this is a new kind of matchup in the conference finals.
Have they ever played in the playoffs against each other?
I feel like they have. They haven't in a while.
Getzlaff,
once.
I don't think they
haven't ever.
Getzlaff and Taves is the matchup you're going to hear about in terms of how they perform. Now, they're not going to play against each other a lot. You're going to see Kessler against Taves all the time, mm-hmm. and the faceoffs are going to be so important because those two guys are just so tough to get off the puck. I guess you lean to how does Brad Richards or whoever they match up, as a Vermette or somebody else, match up against Getzlaff. And the Anaheim Ducks are top-heavy, and although their depth scoring, Silverberg, Bleski have been really good. So I still think Getzlaff and Perry are going to be the big factor. Because, Chicago has won 2 Stanley Cups without a second-line center.
Yeah.
This has been much talked about, and I believe that to be the case. I think right now you've got these two Bs in Vermette and... Richards and Getzlaff's top 7-5 center in the league. You could argue top 3, some people would. So how do they combat that? And that's I'm saying that on the basis that Kessler's able to mitigate what Taves can do, and I'm not so sure that's the case either. So
just quickly, Eric DeHatchek, our good friend, he wrote about this in the Globe and Mail, I believe it was Thursday. He believes Ryan Kessler is going to be the X factor there, right?
Yeah.
That was a great article, as he's a Hall of Fame writer. They're all good. Mm-hmm. I agree with him. Ryan Kessler was excellent against the Jets. He was dominant against the Calgary Flames. Yeah. And they're stronger, and I think they're the strongest team 1-2 up the middle in the NHL. And the Blackhawks just don't have that second-line center that Ryan Kessler has. So he has the ability. He can take over games and all that. But ultimately, I agree with Rich. I'll give my pick. I'm taking the Hawks in 7. I almost want to take them in 6, but I'm going to take them in 7. And I think the way they're playing right now, Duncan Keith is my Conn Smythe favorite right now.
I mean, I think Frederik Andersen is good. I said that since the beginning of the playoffs. I think he's underrated.
Mm.
But I still wouldn't be surprised if you see both 4 netminders in this series at some point, just to kind of change things up.
Which would speak to you thinking it's an offensive series. You both have the Hawks in 7. Yeah. I have the Ducks in 7, so I'm going to I'll take the opposite.
After the first 2 rounds goals, to Richie's point, I think there's 40 less goals, something like that, after 2 rounds compared to last year. There's going to be a lot of goals in this series, though, compared to the Rangers series.
Yes, let's hope that's the case. Let's head to break. When we come back, Tracy Myers, CSNChicago.com, is going to join us, talk more about this series. You're listening to Illegal Curve. It's a Illegal Curve Saturday on TSN 1290. The You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from CSN Chicago, Tracy Myers. Tracy, good afternoon and thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Tracy?
Good. Very good. It's sunny out here, which is, I could say, for Chicago the last couple of days, so I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I'm sure that you're able to handle spending a couple days in Anaheim in the Los Angeles area without much complaint. Don't blame me there whatsoever. Tracy, obviously brought you on to talk about the Western Conference Finals. They get underway finally tomorrow. You think there's going to be any lingering effects for the layoff that both of these teams have had? The Hawks obviously sweeping the Wild in four, and the Ducks taking five games to dispatch the Calgary Flames?
You know what? I don't think so. I mean, this isn't the first break for either of these teams. In fact, we were just talking about this to the Ducks. Obviously, we've talked to the Blackhawks a bit about this the last couple of days. But, you know, they've had extended breaks through the first round. They had extended breaks at the end of the regular season. So this is just, one of the things that both teams have had to deal with. I think the Blackhawks came out of that last series just fine. In fact, they went into the last series just fine, too, because they had 6 days between Nashville and Minnesota, and they ended up scoring three goals in the first 10 minutes against the Wild. So I actually think both teams are going to have an incredible amount of energy. You can tell by today that they're really sick of talking to us. They really want to play hockey again.
Tracy, Michael Roosevelt got injured last series against the Minnesota Wild. Who's going to go in for Michael Roosevelt, and how do you what kind of impact is that going to have against a very good Anaheim offense?
Yeah, David Rundblad is going to take that spot. Now, how much he plays, that's, I think, the bigger question. Knowing Quenneville the way that most of us do, if we've seen these last couple series, I think they're going to lean heavily on the top four guys. And, obviously Duncan Keith plays a ton of minutes, but he's also had a lot of time off, So I think it's just a matter of, okay, we've had the time off. Nothing against Rundblad, but this is all new to him. Getting thrown into such a crazy situation. He's pretty good on the offensive side. The defensive side is where things are a little suspect. And so you lose a guy who's playing 18 minutes, who's playing much better in the second round. So I think, when it comes to Oduya, Jarmelson, Seabrook, and Keith, you're going to be seeing a lot more of those guys.
Tracy, you mentioned that Joel Quenneville is going to lean a lot on those guys, and especially Duncan Keith. And I got to ask you about Duncan Keith. Before you came on, I said to me, if I had to pick a Conn Smythe winner after two rounds, it would be Duncan Keith. I'm a huge fan of Duncan Keith, and how can you not be? But is this the best you've seen him play in a while? Because to me, he looks like a guy that wants to go back to the Stanley Cup Finals and win another cup. It looks like he wasn't happy last year with not going back and losing to L.A.
Oh, I think he's playing very well. He kind of had an up-and-down regular season, and for him, for anybody else, that would have still been a very good season. But for him coming off the Norris last year, I thought he was pretty good this year. I didn't think he was exceptional in the regular season. But no, there's no doubt. I mean, you're seeing a guy right now who is very determined. And, Nicholas Jarmelson was talking about it today. You've got a guy who plays the minutes that he does and plays very well. And Jarmelson said, if that were me out there, I'd be gasping for breath for the amount of minutes that he plays and how well he's able to manage them and the performance level. So there's no doubt. I mean, Keith is kind of playing at another level. I hate using that cliche, but that's certainly a good way to describe him right now.
And Tracy, you look up the middle, the Hawks really haven't had that big-time second-line center, and they've still been winning cups. So, I mean, it hasn't been a huge issue. And you look at the other side, Ryan Getzlaf, of course, is a dominant player. But it appears likely that Anaheim's going to be matching up Ryan Kessler against Jonathan Toews as much as possible. We know they're going to be able to get that matchup fairly often at home. On the road, do you think Joel Quenneville is going to try and change that up, or you think he's comfortable with that?
I think he's fine with that. I mean, yeah, obviously not getting that last change, and he's going to be on the defensive a little bit more. But, Quenneville talks about it all the time, about not trying to change too much, whether it's playing the same style of another team, whether it's, changing lines unless you absolutely have to. So I think he's going to keep it as is. I mean, obviously, Toews has done very well against, the top lines. And, this is what he does. I mean, this is just part of the go for him is facing another team's best. So, I don't see Joe Quenneville changing up too much, because then I think you get into a bad habit of trying to outthink yourself, if that's possible. And, why bother trying? It's Jonathan Toews. He'll be okay.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Tracy Myers of CSN Chicago, previewing the Western Conference Final, which gets underway in Anaheim tomorrow afternoon. Tracy, you look to me, we've watched the Anaheim Ducks, and those of us in Winnipeg have watched them sort of closer than other teams, given what they did to the Winnipeg Jets in the first round. And you see the size of the Ducks, and they're big. Getzlaff and Perry and Raquel, and you can go through their entire roster. They're just big up front, really top to bottom. How big of an impact do you think, or how big of a matchup is the Ducks' size and the Blackhawks' ability to sort of combat it going to be to determine the winner in this series?
Well, it's been a while since the Blackhawks have played the Ducks in the regular season. I mean, they know them, but they haven't seen them as often as maybe the Los Angeles Kings or anything like that. But certainly they've faced teams like this before, be it the Kings, be it the St. Louis Blues in the first round last year. So, I mean, they're outsized by several teams. And, once again, Quenneville always preaches just do what you do best. And so the Blackhawks will certainly try and combat that with their speed. They cannot get into that game where they're trying to trade hit for hit. It's not their game. There was a game at the end of the regular season when they played the Blues, and that's exactly what they did. They were playing their game in the first period. Then they got in the second period, and they just decided, all right, we're going to hit the Blues as much as they hit us, and it played right into the Blues' hands. And they lost that game. They cannot do that against this team. And, they're experienced enough at this point where they know they can't do that at this level. They have to play their style. And they'll take their lumps in this series. There's no doubt about that. That's what Anaheim does. But they're just going to have to get through it.
Tracy, I saw you were tweeting about this earlier. A lot of people were asking you about Chris Versteeg. He got injured earlier in the playoffs. And, Teuvo Teravainen played very well in the Minnesota series. And Antoine Vermette, after being a healthy scratch, he started to play a little better. Do you think Chris Versteeg's going to get back into the lineup, or is it going to be difficult for Joel Quenneville the way Teravainen and Vermette are playing?
Well, it's one of those things that, it can change quickly. I'm using every one of Coach Joe Quenneville's cliches today, so I apologize for that. But it really is that way. I mean, they scratched Vermette off the top of the Nashville series, which I didn't think was a great idea because of nothing else, face-off. And, he's gotten better there. But, if something happens where Teravainen starts slumping or he starts getting really pushed around by the Ducks, wouldn't be surprised if Versteeg goes back in. So it's a situation of never say never. He did have that lower body injury also. But he's perfectly fine and healthy now. So nobody is ever completely out of this lineup totally from start to finish. Quenneville will make tweaks if need be, and so I wouldn't completely rule out Versteeg.
Tracy, from a personal perspective, covering this series, obviously covering the Hawks in general, but covering this series, you have two teams that aren't afraid to actually try to create offense, which is nice for the fan out there watching the game. And of course, it's kind of old school in that way. And also the coaches, you have two coaches who aren't afraid to kind of show their emotion behind the bench, yell and get the players motivated, a little bit like things used to be more so than they are now. How much more interesting does that make that for you covering the series?
Well, I think this is going to be a good one regardless. Boudreaux is certainly a colorful individual. We don't get to see him that much in Chicago. Obviously don't get to see the Ducks that often, and also when he was with the Capitals, same thing. So he is certainly entertaining, to say the least. So that adds to it. And, you've got a mix of guys who, even on Anaheim, who have been here before. I mean, it's been a while since the Ducks won that cup, but Getzlaff was there. Perry was there. I believe Boschman was there. So there are guys who, know what it takes at this time of year. So, you've got the superstars talent. You've got the grizzled veterans and everything. So there's just so much going into this series. And it's a little new. There's certainly some elements to the Ducks that resemble the Kings. But at the same time, a little bit of a different team than we're used to seeing. So it should be very interesting.
Tracy, you look at the goaltending matchup here. The Blackhawks have used both goaltenders throughout the first two rounds of the playoffs. Corey Crawford started, lost the job, Scott Darling, then Corey Crawford got the job back, of course. And Frederick Anderson's been the guy that the Ducks have run with the entire playoffs thus far. Is there an advantage for one team versus the other in terms of goaltending, do you think? Or is it just, pretty even and both, both teams sort of aren't going to expect their goaltender to necessarily have to steal them any games or steal them the series.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see how the goaltending pans out, to be honest with you, because, you know, and I even asked it when I wrote my story on who has the edges. What Corey Crawford are we going to see? Are we going to see the Corey Crawford who, you know, played Minnesota and played Minnesota very well? Or are we going to see the Corey Crawford who struggled against Nashville? And, you know, if we see that guy, I don't see Quenneville hesitating one bit to pull him again because it worked. And, you know, on the other side, you've got a guy who's not very familiar with this time of year, who's been very good. You know, Anderson's been very impressive. So, you know, you always wonder what's going to happen at this stage. You know, going into the last round, I thought, okay, which Devin Dubnyk are we going to see? Is it the Devin Dubnyk that has got the Minnesota Wild into the playoffs, or is he going to struggle a little bit? And he let in a couple soft goals. So, you know, it's always the Crawford factor with me since I cover this team more. But, you know, the goaltending, it always goes to goaltending, obviously. I'm very interested to see how each reacts. Crawford, not so much at the stage, but just seeing if he brings the Minnesota game with him this round, too.
Now, Tracy, this is a little bit off topic, but recently the Blackhawks signed Artemi Panarin, mm-hmm. who's playing for Russia right now in the World Hockey Championships, and he's making a lot of headlines because what he said before the Russia-U.S. game, is I'm sure you heard that. But what do you know about him, and do you think the signing means – what does the signing mean as far as some of the free agents maybe that won't be coming back to Chicago?
Yeah, I actually didn't hear what he said, so I'll be honest, it's been all Blackhawks all the time with me lately, so I have no idea there. But, no, there's no doubt that, you know, when it comes to this guy, when it comes to a couple of the guys, you know, there's going to be some pairing off of this roster. There's some money that's going to have to get moved. So you have to look at every option you've got. You've got to look at some of the possibilities you have here. And so, you know, I know this guy comes in with a lot of pure fanfare. I don't know which word you want to use, but obviously they're very high on him. There was a couple other teams in the running. You know, Stan Bowman has to do what he can. I mean, obviously you want to sign Brandon Saad. I still think you need to sign Marcus Kruger. I think that guy is a gem for everything that he does. But you are going to have to rely on more of your youth, be it Rockford, be it some of these signings that you're making in the offseason. So he's doing what he has to do for a team that, once again, is going to have to go through the salary cap crunch.
You know, Tracy, you look at the forward lines in this, you know, this matchup, and boy, they're deep 1-12. How important is that third line going to be, the Hawks, in terms of maybe having an offensive advantage over that Anaheim third line?
Yeah, I think that's a big one. You know, I was, once again, going through, you know, who had the edges and everything, and you look at this team, certainly both have their firepower, but you've got guys like Patrick Sharp and Antoine Vermette and Teuvo Teravainen on a third line. So I think that speaks volumes for, you know, just how much talent they have with this team. And, yeah, I think that line could be very critical. I mean, Sharp was still there with the points last round. He was much more noticeable, I thought, in the Nashville series. But in Antoine Vermette, you're still waiting for that offense to come about. So I think that line could be very pivotal.
Tracy, we'll let you go on this last question. We, you know, in answering Ezzy's question about Panarin and him coming onto the roster, you mentioned that number of free agents and the number of decisions are going to have to be made, and that this Blackhawks team that you see this year is probably not going to be the same team you see next year. Is there an undercurrent of maybe a little bit of finality in the dressing room that the Blackhawks can use as motivation? You know, they know the salary cap situations, the players, and they know that, you know, some players are going to be on their way out. Is there maybe a feeling in an undercurrent that let's win one more together, you know, before everyone's going to have to go their separate ways, or at least a number of players are going to have to go their separate ways?
Well, I think Patrick Sharp said it best. They go in with that attitude all the time. And, you know, I don't think, I mean, there's going to be some pairing done, but it's not going to be as bad as 2010. I mean, they lost half that team, and you want to talk about guys that they kind of came up through the ranks and everything to make that team great. So it's not going to be like that. You know, a lot of this core is still going to be in place. Maybe you have to part with a Sharp. Maybe you have to part with a Pickle. But there's still going to be a lot of pieces left here. So I think it's just the attitude the Blackhawks have developed over the years now. You just want to win every year, regardless of who's here next year, regardless of who's not here next year. You just want to win.
Tracy Myers covers the Chicago Blackhawks for CSN Chicago. The Western Conference Final gets underway tomorrow afternoon. Tracy, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. It's going to be a hell of a series, and we look forward to seeing your work on it throughout as we go through the Western Conference Finals.
All right, I appreciate it. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Tracy. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Rich is being a bit of a cookie hoarder over here.
A bit of a cookie hoarder?
I think Rich is, you've had like
Let
six.
The BB
how many
King
cookies?
Music just finish off here, please. What song is this, Ezzy? This is where, you know, this is taking over for Springsteen this week, of course.
Paying tribute.
Yeah. Paying tribute to BB yeah. King.
It's been a bad month for people named, last name King, who are in the music business. Benny King before BB King?
It's Benny King.
Yeah. Not a good
what
month.
What song is it, Rich? I don't know.
Thrill is Gone.
Oh, I didn't even realize it was Thrills Gone. That's his most favorite famous
I
song.
I only saw BB King once. I saw him. It's sad news, but it's amazing what he's done.
He's a legend.
The blues, but I saw him in Detroit, the Fox Theater with Buddy Guy. Buddy Guy opened.
Yep. He's coming to Winnipeg. Yep.
Of course, June 17th.
Do you have tickets?
I don't, but I want to get tickets. I've seen Buddy Guy also other times as well with Johnny Lang here. He's from Fargo and is really talented. And apparently the guy playing with Buddy Guy at the June 17th show is similar to Johnny Lang in terms of kind of being a prodigy. But anyhow, I saw B.B. King after Buddy Guy. They didn't play together at the Fox Theater in Detroit. And, oh, that was just incredible. Just the way, you know, he'd stand there and he kind of talk to the crowd. Like he had a different way of doing things. Of course, at this time, this was in 2000 and, I think, 9. So he would have been, what, 80, 84, 85 kind of thing. So 83, 84. So just a great experience. And some woman behind me in the crowd, every time he played a song, it wasn't Thrills Gone because he saved that till later on in the show, and she would just yell, play Thrills Gone. Like every...
Drew, when did Alan Cross become a part become a part of the legal
Our good buddy,
He's from Manitoba, Alan Cross.
Okay.
So, this is also Letterman's last week.
Did you watch Norm MacDonald on Letterman last night?
I did. Our buddy Neil sent me the clip.
It was fantastic. I actually stayed awake.
We saw Norm at Burton Cummings Theater.
A lot of the material he used on the show was actually what he had used for his act here. But sure. The ending was very emotional.
Yeah, well, Norm MacDonald, I mean, his career was largely made on Letterman's show oftentimes. Yeah.
Also, you got any gum. The best skit when he played David Letterman on SNL.
Oh, that's right. That's
kept looking at Paul. He's like, "You got any gum?"
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. It was really. I mean, I don't know if you have you guys seen Letterman shows this week.
Yep.
I haven't.
Yep. They've been
I meant
fantastic.
To tape him. By the
I saw
way,
George Clooney was on there.
George Clooney. He had Oprah on before. Oprah was on.
Seinfeld.
Julia Roberts was on a couple
Seinfeld,
weeks ago.
Was
he? Julia Roberts was on Wednesday night.
And Seinfeld did the same routine he had done 30 years ago
Eddie,
on,
Eddie
on the
Vedder's
show.
Going to be the last musical act.
Well, they haven't announced yet what's on Wednesday. Wednesday's just
they've
surprises.
They've mentioned veterans.
Oh, as they mentioned Pearl Jam going to
Monday,
be there?
Tuesday, and he's off on Wednesday, right?
Wednesday's the last show. Okay, they've announced guests for Monday and Tuesday. I think Monday's Bill Murray, and Tuesday's Tom Hanks.
Bill
or
Murray
versa.
Was on his first ever show, I think.
That's
right.
There's so like he's going back.
Well, Letterman's
these are all
best.
his most often guests. Like Tom Hanks.
You're not going to replace Letterman, just like you couldn't replace Carson.
Yeah. Literally.
No, that's exactly right. But when I was in New York seeing The Daily Show, Letterman. That's when Obama was on Letterman that same that same day, and their studios are very close to each other, just a couple blocks away.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Letterman's I think at 52nd
and
8th or something, and
Broadway.
Is it okay? 52nd Broadway.
Is it?
Yeah. Pardon me?
First and first.
The nexus of the universe. And
Letterman always did a great interview with, you know, intelligent interview. I don't think a lot of the hosts who are now out there can do the same interview that he's capable of doing.
Colbert, I have more faith in. The two Jimmys, I think more
I love
are
Fallon.
Looking. They're doing.
Fallon's
they're
great.
Not. Doing,
Fallon's fine if you want to watch funny YouTube videos and
yeah,
nonsense.
They're not doing. They're not doing. They're doing
well,
buddy
he's a
buddy.
Guy, though.
They're doing
I'm
buddy
he's
buddy
talented,
interviews.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually
a little Jay Leno-esque.
Yeah, Leno-esque. That's fair. But if you go to... And Colbert, I think, can do a very good interview.
I just don't know because he plays a character. I don't know how he's going
to
be in real life.
You have to assume that his interviewing skills will translate.
I think that character kind of is him, though.
I don't think so.
I don't think so at all. I think they're two... He's
no,
done...
But I don't mean, like, his personal life. I mean, kind of like, that's kind of his...
But he,
that's
the
his alter
but the characters.
Ego.
I mean, he's not going to be Stephen Colbert from the Colbert Report. That character's dead. He's going to be Stephen Colbert
it's actually
himself.
It's actually a completely
different person.
He's going to be himself.
Steve Carell's is coming out doing that show.
Exactly. That's very clever. But he's going to be different. Looking
I'm
forward
a clever
to that,
guy, Drew.
If you go onto the Rolling Stone website, there's a great interview with Letterman on the Rolling Stone website. I assume it's in Rolling Stone magazine this month as well.
Brad Oswald had a good article about Letterman in the Free Press.
Yes, he did. He had a very good article about him as well. But they go through a bunch of the sort of the best interviews in the history of the Letterman show.
Can we get Paul Schaefer on the show?
Well, he's from Thunder Bay. Actually, yeah. Sheldon knows him.
Really?
Yeah.
Your dad.
We should get him on.
Yes.
As long as he gets the arena built.
As he saw the tweet, this is speaking of my dad. My dad calls me on Wednesday night.
By the way, this segment.
Drew, are you
really,
the next Rona Raskin?
By the
right
way,
now?
This segment's a real mail-in segment.
Yeah. This is good talking about Letterman. I think this is good stuff.
He needs to be honored.
Yeah, my dad calls me on. It was either
Letterman, not your dad.
Yeah, I know that. My dad calls me on Wednesday night or Thursday night, and you know it's like 9:45, so it's a little bit later than normal for my dad to call me.
I'm usually asleep for two hours at that point in time.
Hot cup of milk.
Yeah, exactly. And he calls me up and he says, "Why are you boring IC Drew on Twitter?"
The Ezzy Faux account that he created?
I say, "Dad, it's a parody account. I'm not actually boring IC Drew on Twitter." And he's like, "It's not." But he's like, "Oh, is that why you say I'm having popcorn? I like popcorn."
By the way, you should follow that. I haven't tweeted. I created that during the first round of the playoffs. I haven't really been using it.
You would think you'd be a little bit busier doing something regarding the playoffs.
For those who don't know, boring IC Drew, I made that kind of after the boring Sean Monahan.
We know.
Well, a lot of people don't know. That's why I'm explaining it.
I mean,
Sheldon didn't know.
That's true.
Which is incredible that he actually thought it was me. I mean, it's pretty. I mean, there's some insulting tweets a little bit.
It's not insulting. It's
pretty funny, I gotta say.
It's humorous. I'm not insulted because I know it's Ezzy.
I'm pretty sure you follow the account, by the way.
Of course I do. I appreciate the parody of it all and everything else. But
you're bringing this much energy next time, Drew. We're going to change it to exciting IC Drew.
Exciting IC
Excitable
Drew.
Excitable IC Drew.
You know, obviously, we ran out of time for rapid fire. Let's do cheers and jeers to finish it off, Chris. Thank you.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never see something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Drew, my cheer goes to world championship players this year. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the tournament. I don't mind watching it. But if all those big-time players are going to go after their seasons are over and serve their country and play for free after making all their money, I think that's great, and it makes the tournament far more exciting. So I'm going to give a cheer to those players.
That's a good cheer, Rich. I'm going to cheer the Red Wings. They're going to name their trophy. I don't know if that was going to be your cheer,
Drew.
That was mine. But we can just, you know, we can both cheer.
I was going to use Eugene Melnick, but that's fine.
Okay, well, we can, you know, I'm cheering the Matthew West was the founder of Cap Geek. Mm-hmm. So the Red Wings are going to name their prospect tournament after him.
That's great.
Which I think is great.
Yeah, the Champions Trophy of the Prospects Tournament is now the Matthew West Memorial
Cup. That's
very
nice.
Which is great of the Red Wings.
That's terrible.
And I'm going to send our best wishes, of course, to Eugene Melnick, mm-hmm. owner of the Ottawa Senators. He's in desperate need of a liver transplant. Send him our best wishes. If you want information on, you know, potentially putting your name forward or just being in transplants in general.
Not just for him.
For everybody who ever would need a transplant. Yeah. Apparently Canada lags behind. Don Cherry was talking about that today. Apparently Canada lags behind in terms of transplant, organ transplants. So we encourage you to, of course, get involved there. Put your name forward if that's something you'd be interested in doing. That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday afternoon. Reminder, 9 a.m. We're going to go back to the usual 9 a.m. start time from now through the end of the summer. Of course, with the World Hockey Championships, that's why
we started from the bottom, Drew. So
easy there, Drizzy. Anyways, big thanks to our guest, Ben Ravi, Capitals Radio Network studio host. Big thanks to Sanaya Sapurja, Yahoo Sports. And big thanks to Tracy Myers from CSN Chicago. And follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris, for producer Corey, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel.
Don't forget about Lauren.
Lauren, who came and saved the day and gave us all microphones. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.